Hey, welcome to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
We are professional screenwriters. We've worked together as a team and separately. We've worked on studio and indie films, live action and animation, from my work on Inside Out and Captain Marvel
to my work in Pixar's story department on Up, Brave, and Inside Out. We are here to share our insights on the craft of screenwriting and also the life, how to not only survive the ups and downs, but thrive. We want to help you become the best screenwriter you can be and to reassure you that you are not alone on this journey.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Today, we are chatting with showrunner turned Marvel Studio writer Michael Waldron. Michael started his career interning for Rick and Morty during its first season. Then he was hired by the show's co-creator, Dan Harmon, to be part of the production staff of Harmon's NBC series Community for its fifth season.
In 2019, he was hired as head writer and executive producer on the Disney Plus series Loki, and has continued his relationship with Marvel, writing the script for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Michael is also the creator and showrunner of the Starz series Heels. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes. Guys.
Yes, welcome, welcome. Thanks so much for being here. I'm sure it's a busy time for you.
Yes, yeah, it's crazy. Thanks so much for having me.
Congratulations on the movie's release.
Yes. Very cool.
Been a long journey. We started, I came on this thing in February of 2020. So quite a bit has happened since then.
I bet.
That's great timing.
I know.
It's great timing. You have plenty of time to write, right?
Yeah. A lot of time. A lot of time for Zoom. That's for sure.
Totally.
Well, our first part of our show is we do our weeks, which is called Adventures in Screenwriting. And Michael has agreed to share his week. We're going to start with Lorianne. She'll show you how it's done.
Great. Okay. Yeah, good.
Because, you know,
if you had made me go first, I was gonna have technical difficulties here.
Right. No. All right, Lorianne, how was your week?
My week was... It's always so hard. How was your week? It's like, I don't know, terrible, amazing, like the ups and downs. I'm working on three TV pitches. The one that's coming up the soonest is an animation show, and it is so fun. It's sci-fi and horror, and it's on IP, and that's my take, is the sci-fi horror take, and I just love it. The stuff I write on my own is very grounded, sort of, you know, adults. But this is so fun. It feels so freeing and so much like play. And I have permission to just do whatever I want. And I love it so much. The other two shows are, you know, live action grounded. And, you know, I'm also writing something original on my own, because when I work so hard on pitches, I don't get to write. I don't get to do the dialogue, which is the thing I love so much, and discover character through that process. So I'm doing that. I'm also very... like in my, you know, and of course in my personal life, I'm very much in that sandwich generation. I have my daughter, and I have my husband, and then my mother is sick. So I'm sort of trying to figure out with my sister how to manage that. And so all of it has found a way to manifest itself in my back. So I'm trying to figure out how to take care of myself. And it is so hard. So I went for a walk yesterday, like exercise walk. I have my exercise shoes on, and my shoe became untied. And I'm not kidding. It took me minutes to figure out how to strategize, to lean down and tie my shoe. At one point I thought, I'll just lie here on the sidewalk for a while. I didn't, but it must've looked like slow motion, like old lady bending down to tie her shoe thing. I mean, I got back to the house and I was like, oh no, this is real. I have to figure out how to take care of myself. But
you won't be able to write. You won't be able to write and do your
that's,
work.
It took that. Like normally my stress manifests in my stomach, and that's sort of like, okay, I can deal with that. But I can't sit and write if my back hurts. So it is now so big in my life and threatening my life and my livelihood. It's like, oh God, I do have to take care of myself, but I don't know how. Like I haven't even made a dentist appointment in like 2 years. Like how do you...
Well, you're going to have to learn. That? You're going to have to learn.
I know, but it's
Michael,
this
does that happen to you,
identity.
Or is this a girl thing?
No. This is my wife is across the room, and I'm certain she's hearing all this, thinking, "Oh, got it. That's why the car hasn't gotten the smog test done." Like, and it's so weird how I'm like, why can I not? I'm not going to finish this movie, this screenplay today. Like, I'm not going to solve every problem today. In fact, a good day of work would be a single good idea a lot of the time. But somehow it seems like if I take the time, if I take 30 minutes to get my life in order, or take care of myself, I'm like, oh no, that will totally ruin my creative endeavor. And so I'll be joining you on the sidewalk soon, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's your writer lying there on the side with untied shoes. I mean, what I feel is this, when you're working, like this constant sense of urgency, right? Yes. Like you said, one good idea, one good line of dialogue, you know, but this sense of, if I step away from 30 minutes, somehow I'll lose not just that, but it all somehow. Is that, or am I?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you guys feel, I mean, every day I'm like doing the thing that I dreamt about doing my entire life. And it feels, I think we all probably have a little bit of that fraud complex. And it's like, if I ever take my foot off the gas, even just to go get the mail, I probably won't be able to do this dream job anymore.
They'll find out. Yeah. They'll find out. I didn't produce enough. I didn't have great enough ideas.
Exactly.
All these ideas today, there's one good one, but look at all these bad ones.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's why I can't get the mail. That's, you know, so there it is. I got a stuffed mailbox.
Michael, how was your week?
It was, I mean, this was not a typical week for me.
Why is that?
Yeah, this was the week the movie came out, and this is my first time writing a movie that got made, and to have it, you know, make a bunch of money has been great. I'm like refreshing the box office website. I feel like I'm in an episode of Entourage, like, but it's fun. And it's like embracing all that is cool. And I'm, it's been great celebrating that success with Sam, our director, who I love so much. We were in a foxhole together for a long time, and to see him having this great success later in his career is awesome. And we went around to a couple different theaters on Friday, me and Sam and Kevin Feige and some of the Marvel folks, and introduced the movie, surprised some audiences. And that was really fun. So it's been great. And in that sense, at the same time, it's like, I've remarked a couple of times, it's like I'm very overstimulated. Like I have a very regimented routine typically of like, I wake up really early and I work, and then maybe it's like I'll go exercise or play golf or something, like just the quiet things. And my life is very not quiet right now. So I guess I look forward to maybe some quiet on the other end of all this.
Are you able, when you're doing all of this, because you don't have that quiet time, are you like thinking of other new ideas or other projects you have, you know, in the future? Are you able even to think about that kind of access, that creative space?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways it's the best time to think about that stuff because it's an escape. You're doing some of your best because it's like, I'm not on a deadline necessarily, you know, I'm helping out with some stuff over there. And then I have, you know, my set projects that are my next things lined up, and they become an escape from the chaos if I can, you know, just daydream about them, as opposed to feeling like, all right, I got to get these pages turned in and everything. So that's at least how I've had to approach it. The nice thing is having most of my life and work centralized under working with Kevin and with Disney is I don't have different masters at different places, you know, like it's like they get that I'm on the press tour for Doctor Strange. So I don't have deadlines on other stuff looming at the moment. That's always helpful.
That is very helpful.
What about you, Meg?
Let's just do my week real quick, because I don't think anybody wants to hear about it when you're on the podcast. Right. But I'll just say quickly. You know, I'm also writing something that's very large with lots of characters and lots of plot. And it's that layering process. You know, and I think that's also why it's hard to stop and give yourself a break, because there's so many balls in the air and you're trying to, even into one scene, layer so many things that are shifting and moving, and still got to be fun and it still has to be a set piece, but what's happening to her arc and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just, there's so many, you know, you're doing draft after draft trying to get those layers down. And it's just trying to find the layering versus economy, right? Like, well, this is a good idea, but that's way too long. Like, we can't do all that. So how can we do that 5 pages? And I don't know, half a page. What's the concept to get this? Or, wow, everybody's standing around talking. Like, shit, what, this has to be active. Like, okay, so I have to put that layer in. Like, how do I, what's the game of this scene, right? Like, that layer has to go in. Like, what's the game of the scene? What's the, what are they trying to do in the scene versus just stand here? Like, it's just all that layering going on and the economy of it. And I'd say my big kind of challenge, let's not call it a struggle, for the week in my craft was kind of what I want for the story and the character versus what the world rules are, right? Like, and especially I'm sure, Michael, you know, with Marvel, this happens all the time, or with anything that you have IP underneath, especially, but even if you're just making it up for yourself and you've made your own world rules, well, you've made them. So, or the IP has them, or it's just the genre or whatever the rules are, versus, I know, but it'd be so good if, like, metaphorically right now she was in a prison and you're like, but they're in cars. So I'm just making that up. You know what I mean? Like, you're right. Like, shit. Like, it's just that trying to stay in the fun spitball of it and not get too like panicked about the metaphor, emotional character stuff I want to them to be doing versus the world rules or the genre, what you set up or what set piece you need right here. Just all that layering that goes into one of these, especially bigger projects. But I think in any project, be that TV or a small indie film, it doesn't matter. Always there's this layering in storytelling that has to happen. And, you know, that's my big drum that I beat, which is why you're doing so many drafts. Like, I think a lot of emerging writers have this idea, Michael, that you, as this big professional experienced writer, sit down and you write one draft and there's all the 10 layers. And if they can't do that, they're not really writers. And it's just like, no, ha-ha.
Yeah. I mean, there must be 200 drafts of this script that I worked on. And yeah, to everything you were just saying, what I learned, especially in the process, you learn so much watching a movie with the audience for the first time. You know, this is my first time watching something in a theater, watching the audience react to it and everything. And you see those big scenes that felt so important with where I really layered metaphors on top of exposition, on top of whatever that seems so important to me. Maybe they fall a little bit flat because what the audience really is there for is character. That's right. And it's simple. The movie, you're so much better off if you can just start simply, because that's what you're going to end up whittling it down to, either in ensuing drafts on set or eventually butchering it in the edit. I feel like you'll end up trying to find the simplest story. I saw the new Top Gun a couple of nights ago, and I love the first Top Gun. It's one of my favorite movies, and the new one is tremendous, and it's just such a simple character story.
Talk about that a little bit. When you say whittling it on all down to character, which I 100%, 1000% agree, and it's how I build. But now, you know, you're talking about Marvel, Loki or Marvel, which is just so much. There's so many things going on. So what is that process of, do you have a process to get it back down to the character?
Well, it's trying to understand it before you go in. So it feels like you got a really strong core, a really strong foundation that you're building around. With Loki, you know, I knew from the beginning that this was a story about his search for identity and ultimately a journey of him forgiving himself and a story of self-love. And with Strange and Wanda, it's a totally different thing. You know, it's Strange kind of, it's Wanda reckoning with her grief in a different way and in her pursuit of her children. And with Strange, it's him confronting the notion that maybe the way he does things isn't the path to happiness and fulfillment for him. And so it's like, I just try to understand, like, what are those very simple character journeys? What's the simple, something James Ponsell, a buddy of mine, said to me once, the writer director, what's the love story in this movie or in this story, you know, in this show? Not mean necessarily a romantic love story, but just between two characters or a character in the what is that central relationship? And just trying to find all of that before you start figuring out what are the rules of the multiverse, because you want the plot, at least to me, to bend to the will of the character stuff and not the other way around. Because ultimately it will. When you're on set, you'll be standing there with the actors, and if it's plot driven and not character driven, everybody's going to suss that out, and you're just going to find yourself rewriting in a frenzy, and you're going to end up with something that kind of sucks. So you want trying to start simply.
So how do you do that? How do you, what's your process of figuring out what it's about before you go in, right? I tend to figure out what it's about. Like, I just start writing, right?
I think it's about this, and then on draft two, I'm like, shit, no, it's about this. And
draft three,
I mean, are you still processing through writing, or do you do it all in cards or?
No. I guess that's the next day is everything I just said. I immediately throw out the door because I'm terrible at outlining. I don't do note cards, and I really can only discover it on the page through dialogue. So it's like, I just have to have like a sense in my head of something emotional, something that moves me that can pull me through the pages. And then hopefully at the end of that, you're like, okay, maybe it's this. And then you're shaping that thing. It just needs to be at the forefront, whatever it's really about.
So this is really validating because I have the same process, but when I've been working with a network, right, they need the outline, or a studio, they need the outline. So how do you find the balance? You know, like when you're on a TV show and you're pitching a show, you sell it. They're like, okay, what's the outline? We need the outline. So how do you do that?
Well, you got to just do it. And it's embracing,
totally.
You know, to the sense that embracing the fact that an outline, it only feels like a book report if you make it feel like that. There's no, you know, and I now just write dialogue heavy outlines because that's what actually makes me engage with them. And that's how I discover in the outline phase. And I think that makes my outlines more valuable. And you don't want to, I mean, it's tricky because you don't want to, if you overload an outline with dialogue, then it's going to become a slog to read. But that's my trick, is dialogue's what I like writing the most. So I just don't, you know, I let myself have that joy even in the outline.
Do you think it's fair that what you're putting into the outline is your voice, the tone of the show? I think a lot of people think the outline has to be this very generic, overly crafted sort of document, like a book report, but it should be the voice of the show or the voice of the characters, like you're saying. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think hopefully it's your voice. It's the voice of the storyteller. You know, you don't, I guess you don't want to get too cute, by, you know, in the same way that like you can get too cute even in your action lines and everything. It's like, if you're just trying to be Shane Black on in your action too much, then you're probably going to end up annoying people. But I mean, your personality should shine through. At the same time, like there's also versions of outlines that are very bare bones and it's just a blueprint. And I think that works too. It's just, it's whatever, what helps you get to the end of it? That's the trick.
Yeah. And I'm just digging at this because I think a lot of emerging writers think there's a formula.
Yeah.
You know, this is how it's done. This is how Michael does it. So that's how it should be done. And it's like, well, that's how you're doing it that one time for that one project, right? You know, is what we try to talk about a lot.
A lot of our viewers asked about writing from IP, especially a Marvel situation where you've got, you know, IP ahead of you, behind you, you know, 6 movies that way to 10 movies that way. How you approached working with IP material of that depth?
It was the same thing on Doctor Strange as with Loki, and this comes from Kevin Feige in the studio, which is, don't worry about all the other stuff. Don't worry about what came before. Know about it because it's potentially emotional dynamite for you. But don't worry about it. Don't worry about the future. Just make your project the best it can possibly be. You know, operate as if the future of Marvel Studios hinges on my little Loki show.
And how do you put yourself in it when the IP is there and it obviously was created by someone and he's a beloved character and all of that? Like, do you have any process for making it your own, so to speak?
I think that it's, at least in that case, when you're going into the Marvel world, you're not consciously saying, I want to make it my, you know, you don't want to make something prepackaged. You want to trust that I'm entering into a collaboration with this broader world that exists, and I'm going to do my version of a Marvel thing. And in the case of Loki, that meant some really long dialogue scenes that I never thought I was going to get away with. But in fact, they encouraged and said, can we have more of that? You know, and then in Doctor Strange, you know, I actually tried to write toward making a Sam Raimi movie even more than a Marvel movie, because I, you know, it was a feature thing. And I really thought of myself as Sam's partner and I wanted to set him up for success. So I think, you know, in television, I guess there's more of an opportunity to make it yours. There's more runway. Maybe television writers certainly have a little more power. But you can't get overwhelmed, especially in a big IP thing, with the notion of how I'm going to make it my own, because it's got to get made first.
I'm such a huge fan of Loki, by the way. I'm slightly geeky now, but
same. And right. I loved it.
I loved reading about your director on that TV show. She sounded awesome. How was it working with a director? There may be no difference between working with a director in television or working with the director in features. Now, certainly in television, show running is very different, right? But just if you could talk a little bit about that for them.
Well, thank you so much. Loki, by the way, we referenced Inside Out a ton. I don't know if I'm sure you know, you've worked with Kevin. Like, Inside Out's one of his favorite movies. Like, he adores that movie. But we referenced that as an example of, like, here's how you build a world, you know, this high concept world and with rules that's a bureaucracy to some extent, and take it seriously, you know, and you never really sell out the idea and make it emotionally charged. Inside Out was a great North Star for us.
Thank you. I just thought what you did, and I want to hear about the directors too, but now I'm going to throw in another question because I just have so many. I just love having you here. Loki as a character was so fascinating. The character, and I know he's not someone you quote unquote created, but your universe of him. Because he was so appealing, even as he was being very naughty, right? Like, just, he's an anti-hero in some sense, right? I mean, and yet you just gave him such humanity. I'd love to talk about that too. So now I've thrown two giant questions on the table.
Okay, well, so first off, the collaboration with the director, Kate Herron, brilliant. I mean, I couldn't have been luckier to have her come on. And really, it was a baton pass on that show in a lot of ways, because it wasn't traditional show running on Loki. I was the creator and head writer in this, you know, and then as we went into production, you know, it became more Kate's. It was run more like a feature. Fortunately, and this is rare, I think, our scripts were all in really good shape. We kind of got it right. And that, I think, as we just got lucky. I had an amazing writer's room on that project. And we all, my original pitch on that show was, guys, what if the Loki show was the best show anybody had ever seen? Like, what if Loki?
I'm going to steal that for all my pitches coming up. What if this is the best show you've ever seen?
By the way,
it'll sell, right?
By the way, you should. Like it's a weirdly subversive thing to say, where it's like, yeah, but what if it was incredible? Because it's like, there was, it always felt like there's a version of the Loki show that, of course, it's low hanging fruit. He's a beloved character, and it's time travel. You could have him. I always said that it, like, okay, great. It's going to be him riding with Paul Revere saying the British aren't coming. like that's going to be like, that's the sketch comedy version of the show. And so we set in our writer's room a really high bar for the ambition of what the show could be. And Kate came in and matched that and then elevated it, you know, with the crew that she hired and with just the staggering amount of work she put into making the show. And so, you know, she had the same approach. And I think that's how we got that. It was cool because her and I both were pretty young to have that opportunity on that show. And we both, I think, felt like we really had something to prove, that was our big shot. And it came together and it worked. The other ingredient in all of that is the cast.
Great casting. Casting is so good.
Exactly. And it's especially Tom Hiddleston as Loki. I was fortunate because I got to create a TV show in which I didn't have to find really the emotional depth of my protagonist. It was already there. It was because Tom had been playing it on the screen, and I knew, wow, we have one of the best actors alive. We're putting him in the show. It's going to be good no matter what. And so I felt like it was my job to just find moments for him to shine. So like the end of episode one, where he sees his life play out in front of him, it's like, great. Here's a great showcase for what Tom can do. So it was just a lot of collaboration with him, with Tom, talking about, you know, talking about the character, talking about how to make sure we were exploring something new, that we weren't just retreading old ground from the movies. I love working with actors. That's, you know, that is what we do, certainly in the world that I'm in. And it's, I think it's such a joy. And yeah, it was just,
can you talk a little bit about that? Because of course, emerging writers, aren't going to have access to actors, especially at that level. And yet you are writing for actors. And I think a lot of times writers forget that they're writing for actors. And what does the actor need in this scene? And what are you exploring for the actor? And what does the actor get to do, and behavior? Like, what do you love about working with an actor?
Well, that's who you go to the movies for, right? Like that's, you know, that is what probably drew all of us into this originally, is these great performances. And there's so much craft. I mean, really, we're writing for actor, you know, we're creating blueprints for an entire production. And I think it behooves all emerging writers to understand that a lot of you're just the first department on, is a good way to think about it, you know, and that there's going to be a million other people who come onto this production and make it their own, and they're going to be brilliant in their own ways, and you're all going to work together with actors. It's their job to emotionally interrogate every moment that you're asking them to inhabit, because they have to play that truthfully, otherwise they look like an idiot. And so, you know, you've got to give a script that is emotionally honest, and there's something for them to grab hold of. But then you can also do yourself a lot of favors by just understanding, just basic communication, understanding that part of being a writer, especially in a professional setting, is being able to talk about your work, adjust your work. You know, not everybody's going to always understand it the same way you do. But oftentimes they're going to bring a different, deeper understanding to it. And that becomes an opportunity for you to make it better. I think reading, to the extent that writers can study acting, read books, everybody should read the Mike Nichols biography, because it's so much about working with actors and just making stuff.
I also encourage them to take an acting class. You don't have to be an actor, but you need to know what it feels like and what do you need to say these lines. And I think it, like, just like they need to get in an edit eventually so that they just understand that these are different storytellers coming in.
That it's, yeah, to understand how it's, and look, I used to do it. It's easy to think you just operate in a vacuum and it just lives and dies on your final draft on your laptop and that's it. But yeah, I mean, I did a little stupid cameo in Doctor Strange, and it's like me walking out onto a balcony next to Rachel McAdams, and we're supposed to be looking at a giant octopus attacking New York. And we did it, you know, and we were like over halfway through the shoot, and I had to go get in hair and makeup and everything. And I'd been working with all the actors the whole way through. And when I was up there standing next to the actors and Rachel and them, and it was time, I was so nervous. And that feeling of fear, of like, everybody's watching me. If I blow this take, time is money. And everybody's going to look at the monitor and see I was the idiot. That means we have to go again. And I'm wasting our time. And I was like, that is so much pressure. And it gives you such a appreciation for what they're able to do under a really immense amount of pressure.
Totally. So you were on set the whole time, like every day.
Was
the whole time. Wow. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like
as a writer?
As a writer,
that was a blast. It was the best experience of my life. Hard, because we were shooting in London while we were locked down the entire time, so it was a lot of takeout food and eating bagels and just getting out of shape. But
that sounds like everybody's locked down, I have to say.
Well, yeah.
You at least are making a movie.
I was also doing eating a lot of bagels.
That sounds very familiar. What is a director? Is it the director calling you in? Are you there? Are you ever approaching anybody on your own? Are you always waiting for the director? Like, how does even the politics of that work?
Well, in the case of this, when I started, I never really spent that much time on set, because Heels, my show on Starz, that I We have a great showrunner on that, Mike O'Malley. And then Loki, they were both shooting in Atlanta, but I was had to be in London. So I had three things in production at once. And Doctor Strange was the thing that that I needed to be there for the most. And I remember on the first day of production, I like walked on, I was like, wow. And I just immediately tripped over the dolly track and almost face planted. Our executive producer, the great Jamie Christopher, he's a legendary AD, Michael Waldron, everybody. And you just got to, but like by the end, it's like you're comfortable. You just have to embrace that. Because at that point I had such a close relationship with Sam and we had developed this movie together so closely over the course of the pandemic and everything. I was there typically with him at the monitor the whole way through. And it was great. And I learned, for me, it was like going to film school. It was just an education on directing. And I, you're all in it together. And so I had my own relationships and closeness with the actors. And so I did feel comfortable, if there was a moment to give notes, but I always, you always defer to your director, and make sure that you're realizing his vision before you go off and start running your mouth to somebody.
Okay. I have a really important question for you. Did you have your own chair and what did it say on it?
I had my own chair and it just said my name. No,
I love it.
Yeah. It said my
dream come true, right? You walk onto set and there's your chair.
Yeah. It was the coolest thing. I think at one point there was like in one of the sets, there was like an old toilet or something and they moved the chair back onto the back of the toilet and I had to sit there right for the day, but it was fun. And it was so, I remember having moments of like, this is a dream come true. Cause we're sitting there on Camertage, the big magical fortress set. There's things blowing up. I'm sitting next to Sam and I got my laptop and I'm writing scenes that we're going to shoot in a week. And it's just, and I was like, this is it. I might not ever get that again and I'll never get it again for the first time. And so it was a really special experience.
I love that you were able to find the space, that moment to be like, this is amazing, right? Because we can get so caught up in the work and the urgency and the deliverables. And so to be able to like celebrate even for those seconds that you had of like, this is the coolest thing ever, right? I just think that's so important for us to stop and
well, and also it's easy right now, a week after the movie came out and did well, to be like, God, that was great. I had a blast the whole way through. It's probably in the day.
I'm looking at you like, you're magical. You had this, this moment, like it sounds so magic because, it's scary when you're on set and the deadlines are coming.
No, I mean, I was panicked. I'm away from my wife. It's so cold. I'm like, God, this place, I'm going to die in London. it was a great adventure. But that's also a testament to Sam. I learned in the same way that as a showrunner, you set the tone for your production in a lot of ways. Sam, as our director, he was the captain of the ship and he was unflappable under the most challenging of circumstances. And because of him, it was an adventure. It was not a slog, which was nice.
That's awesome. Jeff, did you have some questions you wanted to ask? I want to make sure before we...
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you invoked the name of James Ponsoldt. He's like my all-time favorite director. I hope that's okay for me to say.
Yes, he's the best.
He's the best. And one thing I love about his work is it's so emotionally honest. Like, I watch the end of the tour like 3 times a year just because I love that. It reminds me of what it's like to write truthfully. But, I'm curious. all of your work really nails that. Like, you've been talking about character authenticity and honesty, and I can tell that's a really important priority for you in your work. But at the same time, you're writing these high concept, uber stylized studio movies. How do you navigate that line between like fun, quippy dialogue and like studio kind of elevated style, but also authentic, like human writing when you're approaching big work like you do?
I guess it's, I mean, the truth is something like Heels is probably more in my wheelhouse than Loki, at least to me, than Loki or Doctor Strange. You know, that's what I would have said. Heels was the pilot that I wrote that started my career, a drama about wrestlers in the South. But I found that I really enjoy, to the extent that it's possible, trying to bring a real authentic humanity to this big blockbuster stuff. It seems like one of the hardest flaming hoops to jump through. And that's what's exciting about it. You know, in another life, I'd be happy just sitting, writing plays that take place in a single location.
Bringing yourself to those? When you say to bring the humanity, I have to assume, and maybe I'm wrong, that you have to bring some sort of vulnerability to yourself, like putting yourself in there.
Totally, totally. Loki is a story about, and Loki and Doctor Strange are stories about characters obsessed with control, coming to grips with the fact that they can't control everything in their lives, which sounds a lot like a screenwriter, you know.
That doesn't resonate with me at all. That's fine.
Yeah, and well, certainly that was Loki, and Doctor Strange. He said, "There's my favorite line in the movie." He says to Wong, he asks Wong, he says, "Are you happy?" And they have this conversation about happiness, and Strange says, "You'd think saving the world would get you there, but it doesn't." And that, to me, I guess I'll be honest, I was drawing a straight line back to when I sold my very first show, when Heels first got optioned when I was 26. And I remember up to that point being like, this will change my DNA and I will forever be happy. This is my dream will come true. And I'll never not be happy again. And of course that wasn't the case. I woke up and I was still me, and all the old anxieties and everything were still there. And now nearly a decade later, you learn that it's like my happiness is in my family and my wife and, you know, in the real stuff, and that success, whether as a screenwriter or as a sorcerer, is just a small component of that. So I guess, yeah, I guess I am trying.
Yeah, and I thought, what I love what you did in Doctor Strange too, and so many of the storylines is about the process. Like, shit's gonna go bad and then it's gonna be great and then it's gonna go bad again, but it's like, this is your choice. It's almost like creativity itself, right? And that, yes, there's the family component, and then there's why you're doing it in terms of that creative outlet that it is for you. It's not the bomb that's going to give you control and make you valuable. It's actually the thing that's going to challenge you, right?
It's not like the process of writing a script itself. It's not overnight. It's not, there is no lottery. There is no winning lottery ticket moment. You don't write the script all at once. You don't find fulfillment and satisfaction all at once. It's a process. And if you get one great idea a day, then you're doing pretty good. And I think that's when writing feels like a nice little metaphor for life.
I love that. That's beautiful, but also I quit.
There's no
lottery. If I can't wear the crown and be happy and
fulfilled, no, you can do it. You can do it.
Yeah,
that's bullshit.
I'm quitting.
That's bullshit. I was just lying. I was just trying to sound good on the podcast. I'm kidding. It happens. It's going to happen to you.
There's going to be the day that our emerging writers are going to get put in the WGA like me, and they're going to hold their card up and take a phone, a picture, and it's going to be a great day. And there's going to be a day they're walking down a red carpet. Those days do come.
Yes.
But that's not, it's not like you change on the other side of that. You still now have to do the work, and you know, you're going to get the one good idea today, and then tomorrow you're going to be like, it doesn't work, but it was a good idea, right? Like, it's just, it is just the tumult. Thank you so much for being here.
I do have one more question.
Okay, one more question.
Really quickly about how you got the opportunity to work with Marvel. Like, what was that click over?
Yes, that was, I had created Heels. I had run the writer's room for season one at Stars in 2017. And then they hadn't greenlit it to series. And I thought, that's it for me. I'm done as a writer. That's it. I'll never work again. And I licked my wounds for a month or two. And then I was like, well, I want to write, I want to write Marvel movies and I want to write Star Wars movies. What do I have to do? And my managers and agents said, you need to write a feature spec, because I didn't even have one. And so I spent, I guess, the spring of 2018, I wrote a time travel action movie, like a little rom-com thing, that made its way onto the blacklist that year, but also made its way over to Marvel as a sample. And I was just lucky in that they were putting together the Loki show and they knew it was going to have a big time travel component. So it happened to be the right sample at the right time.
Right. And you wrote it. I mean, can I just say to all our emerging writers, he wrote it. He probably wrote many, many drafts of it, right? Like, that is, you don't know where it's going to go. You don't know what it's going to get you. If that movie ever gets made or what door it opens, it's all about the writing.
I would just say that it's, I guess a lot of what we've talked about is like what happens on the other end of like that, you know, some good stuff happening. One great piece of material can change your life. It really can. It happened to me with the Heels pilot. And then I guess again with this feature, but you've got to finish stuff. That's the thing. You've got to finish.
Many times.
Yeah. You've got to revise it. Many drafts.
You got to revise it and finish it many times. Get a lot of feedback.
Yep.
We always ask the same three questions at the end of our show. So we're going to ask you. So I'll start. What brings you the most joy when it comes to your work?
Just dead silence, just dead air.
Michael, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Wait, do I say, am I supposed to?
That was the most honest answer I think we've gotten, which is, joy.
But you told us, you sat there and said you had a moment of joy sitting on set, helping create this thing, San Raimi, things blowing up. You had a moment of joy.
Yeah, it's when things are crazy and you pull a rabbit out of your hat and, you know, I guess it is that great idea that feels like it saves the day for you. That's a great moment.
And these questions that we ask don't have to apply to Marvel or anything. It'd just be any writing at all.
Yeah.
Just so go ahead. Sorry, Lauren, you want to go?
All right. The next one is, what pisses you off about your work, about writing?
It's so hard. That every time you start a new script, you're just starting from scratch. It's like Tom Brady, when he goes to play football, he's awesome because he's been doing it his entire life. He's built an entire life's worth of skill and ability. He like that. Whereas me, I feel like I'm picking up the football for the very first time in my life. Every time I sit up at the I sit down at the computer. It's just how you have to start over every time.
It's so annoying.
What is story? What are words?
What's a movie?
How do I type?
Yeah. It's like, that's the thing. Experience really only gets you so far. It's just as hard as it ever was.
And the last question, Michael, is if you could be remembered for one scene that you've written, what would that be?
God, that's a good question. Well, I guess the scene that I'm really, really proud of is when Loki sees his life flash before his eyes. And that was, you know, that's not even really much that I did. That's Tom Hiddleston just being great. But
it's almost have emotional resonance for you.
Yeah, that felt like, it just felt like such a cool once in a lifetime sort of thing to take a big blockbuster movie franchise villain that the audience had invested 10 years of emotion into, and to get to weaponize that in that way emotionally in that scene just felt on television, just felt totally original and cool. And Kate did a great job shooting it. It just all came together in a way that I'm really proud of.
It is. It's such a great scene. I can see it. It's so inspirational and just burned into my brain. I love that scene. It's amazing. Thank you so much, Michael Waldron, for joining us on the show today. We really appreciate you being here. We know how busy you are with the opening.
Thank you. And both Heels and Loki have been renewed for 2 seasons, so please check those out. And of course, Doctor Strange is on the big screen, and if you haven't seen it, go see it.
Thanks, guys. Thank you all so much.
Lastly, next week we have another Patreon workshop for our Patreon, so make sure you subscribe and go over there. And that's the show.
And remember, you are not alone, and keep writing.
Thanks for tuning in to The Screenwriting Life. We love our community and we want to get to know you even better. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife or email us at thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com to have your question considered for the show. You can also suggest topics by emailing us there. Also, we'd love for you to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if we don't read your review on air, trust me, we have read it, and not only does it mean the world to us, but it helps other people find the show. We've always been driven by mission and mentorship, and reviewing our show helps expand that mission. And of course, until next Sunday, happy writing.